Hi, this is Lunchy. I just listened to Anna Unfolding's really interesting meta on the difference between just reading a text without the performance aspect and then reading it with the performance aspect as a Podfica does. And I've chosen to read the very first scene from Play It Again by Metiscat, a Teen Wolf fan fiction about Styles going from one reality to another reality where all the Hales live, and some other stuff is different. The first scene is split into two points of view, using normal text and italicized text. The italicized text is Styles from the alternate universe, and the normal text is Styles from the Teen Wolf universe, where they're both going to crush their cars. Apologies for the sound quality. I'm in my living room right now, and it's a very big space, so the sound quality is not going to be great, and you're going to hear things like lawn mowers and like birds and just people like knocking stuff over outside. And I'm going to try to be as candid as possible about reading choices and things like that. Just because after listening to Anna Unfolding's recording, I just realized that there was quite a lot of stuff that goes into every single choice that the Podfica makes, and that I must unconsciously make as well. This is going to have a different sort of commentary to it, as well as just reading choices and stuff like that. And the reason is because this story has been made into a Podfic already by it was read by Mothlights. Because I'm a serial offender of multiplicity, this kind of gives me more freedom to engage in the text in a slightly different way. There is no longer any constraint on me to be 100% faithful to the text because somebody else has already done that. And therefore, it leaves me a bit more creativity with what I can inject into the scene or how I can reorganize a scene and things like that. And this leaves me a lot less guilty just because somebody else has already been incredibly faithful to it. Therefore, I don't have to. And if readers pick up on the fact that this is not 100%, of course I'm going to be true to the spirit of the text and what the scene is trying to convey, or what I perceive the scene is trying to convey, which is what interpretation is all about. Yes, if they don't agree with any of that, then they can, go and listen to Mothlight's version, which is completely 100% trying to be respectful of the original work and not really playing around with it like I am. So I'll try to be explicit in what my goals are for constructing this very short scene together. First, we're going to start off with a straight reading that's only concern is getting from A to B. There's no performance aspect, there's no pacing. It's just read all the words from the start of the scene to the end of the scene. And we'll see if it makes a really big difference or not to your ear. Okay, so Play It Again, scene one. Reading only. Styles is driving. Styles is driving. Styles is driving like the hounds of hell are chasing him because, yeah, they basically are. Styles is driving like an idiot and he knows it, but he was supposed to pick Scott up 20 minutes ago. If by hounds of hell you mean Peter Hale, maybe that's generous. Maybe Peter doesn't rate that kind of respect. If he's any later, he's going to have to hand in his best friend card. Scott will make the disappointed but not surprised face. It'll be the candle in the cake of awful this year has been. This is all Derek's fault. It shouldn't take a genius to work out that an undead uncle who killed your sister isn't the kind of guy you should hang around with. Seriously, Derek? This is all Dad's fault. If he hadn't decided the time for the Safety in the Woods lecture was now, Styles would have left on time and would not be speeding. Seriously, Dad? Of course, Derek is dead now. No point being mad at a dead guy. Fuck, Derek is dead. Of course, Dad had found like three dead bodies in the woods this month. It's fair to be worried. That's a frickin' lot of corpses all of a sudden. He's starting to think he's gotten away clean when Peter runs in front of the car out of nowhere. He slams on the brakes, but he knows he's screwed. He slaps his hand over his heart and activates the rune on the pendant there, untested and untried, for use in last resort only. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan. But it's definitely last resort time because Peter is grinning and reaching into the car. He's starting to think he won't be more than half an hour late when a deer runs in front of the car out of nowhere. He swerves to miss it and slams on the brakes, but then he sees the tree and he knows he's screwed. He has a split second to realize that he's going to die, and that is going to kill, and that is going to kill Dad. The car crashes, and everything goes black. So two things about that reading. One, it's definitely a reading. I didn't try to put any effort into storytelling or pacing or any of those sort of things. I just read the words that are on the page. And actually, this is a technique. I use this as a technique when I'm flubbing really badly due to the author's grammar, or because there's a word that in there that just really screws me up a lot. And I read it like without any of the inflection or any of the performance, so that I can train my mouth so that it knows that it can make those sounds in that order in that time frame. And if all else fails, then and I still flub it on the next take, then I go back and make it slower and break down the particles so that I have more, like, I can splice in easier. So for example, if I was going to screw up split second, he had a split second to realize that he's going to die. He has a split second to realize that he's going to die. So I've broken that sentence up into three parts, which is he has a split second to realize that he's going to die. This gives three opportunities to fix up potential mistakes. And this works for me on any long run-on sentence, just to break down the clauses individually so that I can splice them up afterwards. The second thing that the reading reveals is that even though I'm trying my best to just read off what is on the page, what I end up doing, especially in that kind of last 20 seconds, was kind of thought I knew where the sentence was heading, and then I read it like that instead of reading what was on the page. And this is a very common problem, just because I've just read so many pieces of fiction or whatever that, you know, you start to anticipate the ending of sentences, and it doesn't matter how many times you've read it, you still kind of think, oh, well, that probably is what it's going to say. So I stuffed up, and that is going to kill Dad. To me, it's like, and that is going to kill Dad is going to be perfectly fine. But what the author actually wrote is, and that is going to kill Dad. My mileage varies on this. Sometimes I will fix it up because I just like, oh no, I stuffed it up. I have to do it regardless of whether or not it actually made that much of a difference overall in the scene. Or I will, you know, I'll be like, oh, it's close enough. And then I'll just leave it and go on because, like, who's got time for that? Sorry. Okay, but back to the actual, just the reading bit. To my ear, the reading bit's really, really bad. It just kind of sounds like I'm recounting the story to somebody else, without trying to make the listener immersed in what's happening. So this gives you a kind of, or at least to my ear, it sounds just like blah, 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 and then he said blah, 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 and that was like blah, 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 and then yeah. So that's not kind of what you want to do with a story that you love so much that you want to spend hours and hours and hours recording it and putting and editing it and putting it all together. At least I don't want to do that. I would like to give the listener an immersive listening experience where I try to convey all the emotions that the character is going through and what this makes me feel, blah, 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 whatever. The straight reading also doesn't differentiate very well, orally, audibly, whatever, between the point of view of current styles and point of view of alternative universe styles. So I kind of tried to pause between, or I wasn't, it was a straight reading. So it's just like reading A to B. I didn't do anything to particularly denote that there was a switch in point of view. And that probably was potentially confusing, especially because the listener probably didn't know when the point of view was shifting. I also didn't alter my tone of voice at all. Well, unless it was unconscious. I kind of could start to hear, like, kind of in the middle of that first scene, that where I was subconsciously making it more palatable to the ear. So I tried to, like, you know, just keep going and not do that anymore. But it's actually quite difficult to start reading something and try not to be a bit performative about it. So I tried not to use the tone, alter the tone of my voice to make anything sound more painful or more scary or any of those sorts of things. And I think that overall probably gave it a really flat listening experience. So now let's talk goals. The scene sets up the entire story. So it has to be paramount that the listener understands that there are two different styles as running parallel to each other, experiencing the same kind of accident, and that one, and that it it will be evident later on that one Styles has taken over the other Styles in the parallel universe. So it needs to be very, very clear to the listener, or that's the goal. The goal is to make it explicit to the listener when the POV shifts happen, and to try and immersify the reader into how scary the situation is for both Styleses. And of course, as always, to make the listening experience pleasurable by changing up the cadence or the tone or stuff or whatever, so that when you're listening to it, you're not kind of like zoning out, but you're actually being, or trying, or at least I'm trying to make the listener be very conscious of every word and how important every word and every sentence is to the scene and how important that scene is to the rest of the story. So three goals. One, make the reading interesting. Two, make it explicit that there are two Styleses in running in parallel universes. Three, inject fear into the scene through the two Styleses who are crashing into each other. So already when I was reading the story, or just reading the words out loud, I was brainstorming about how I can go about achieving these goals. And the first one to try to get out of the way is the alternating point of view shifts. This can probably be solved by putting some sort of effect on parallel universe Styles, so that you straight away understand that this is happening to somebody else, and therefore separating the two timelines. Secondly, there are phrases that repeat. For example, you know, the Styles is driving and Styles crashes the car. These lines repeat, so it's probably would be easy to double the lines on top of each other so that you get a like an echo effect, and therefore you further get the feeling that these two things are happening simultaneously. So what's going to happen now is that I am going to basically read the scene raw without editing anything out to the best of my ability, because it's become second nature for me to like stop the recording and edit things out now. But I'm going to try and keep my hands off the keyboard so that you get the full effect of how shit I am at podficking actually, and that it's a miracle that any of my podfics actually sound like they do. So here is Play It Again by Metasket, scene one, performed. Styles is driving. Styles is driving. Styles is driving like the hounds of hell are chasing him, because, yeah, they basically are. Styles is driving like an idiot, and he knows it, but he was supposed to pick Scott up a... Styles is driving like an idiot, and he knows it, but he was supposed to pick Scott up 20 minutes ago. If by Hounds of Hell you mean Peter Hale, maybe that's generous. Maybe Peter doesn't rate that kind of respect. If he's any later, he's going to have to hand in his best friend card. Scott will make the disappointed but not surprised face. It'll be the candle on the cake of awful this year has been. This is all Derek's fault. It shouldn't take a genius to work out that an undead uncle who killed your sister isn't the kind of guy you should hang around with. Seriously, Derek. This is all Dad's fault. If he hadn't decided the time for the Safety in the Woods lecture was now, Styles would have left on time and would not be speeding. Seriously, Dad. Of course, Derek is dead now. No point being mad at a dead guy. Fuck, Derek is dead. Of course, Dad has found like three dead bodies in the woods this month. It's fair to be worried. That's a frickin' lot of corpses all of a sudden. He's starting to think he's gotten away clean when Peter runs in front of the car out of nowhere.
He slams on the brakes, but he knows he's screwed. He slaps his hand over his heart and activates the rune on the pendant there, untested and untried, for use in last resort only. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan. This is such a Derek plan. But it's definitely last resort time, because Peter is grinning and reaching for the car. Because Peter is grinning and reaching for the car. He's starting to think he won't be more than half an hour late when a deer runs in front of the car out of nowhere. He swerves to miss it and slams on the brakes, but then he sees the tree. He swerves to miss it and slams on the brakes, but then he sees the tree, and he knows he's screwed. He has a split second to realize that he's going to die, and that that is going to kill Dad. He has a split second to realize that he's going to die, and that that is going to kill Dad. He has a split second to realize that. He has a split second to realize that he's going to die, and that that is going to kill Dad. And that that is going to kill Dad. The car crashes. The car crashes. The car crashes. And everything goes black. So, differences between the reading version and the performance version. The reading version was 1 minute and 50 seconds. The performance version, in its raw form, is 4 minutes long. This is double and then some. And so even though there was flubbing in the reading version, there was flubbing of a different kind in the performance version. Because when you're having to emote at the same time that you read, it becomes very challenging to keep everything straight. And therefore, I think that's why I flub a lot more, because I'm thinking about like, oh, be sad, or oh, be scared, and things like that, as well as, oh, and then you got to read the next line and the next line and the next line. I made a very clear distinction between present styles and parallel universe styles. Present styles is like from, you know, the dark timeline. He's the darkest timeline styles. Therefore, he has a much darker, harsher tone to his voice, whereas the parallel universe styles doesn't have so many things weighing him down. He's still very innocent and very pure, and therefore it's easier to go between the two points of view, just because I focus on having to be trying to inject a lot more grit into darkest timeline styles than I do into the, oh my God, I hit a deer styles. Okay, next up is going to be the performed version of the first scene with all of the sound effects and editing all together, to see exactly how long the finished product takes. And I will be timing how long it takes me to perform, add sound effects, edit, give a listen through, fix up anything that I want to fix up, and then we'll come back for the discussion after that. So, play it again. By Metaskit, scene one, performed, edited, sound affected, whatever. Styles is driving.
Styles is driving.
Styles is driving like the hounds of hell are chasing him.
Styles is driving like an idiot, and he knows it.
They basically are. If by hounds of hell you mean Peter Hale. Maybe that's generous. Maybe Peter doesn't rate that kind of respect.
He was supposed to pick Scott up 20 minutes ago. If he's any later, he's going to have to hand in his best friend card. Scott will make the disappointed but not surprised face. It'll be the candle in the cake of awful this year has been.
This is all Derek's fault.
This is all Dad's fault.
It shouldn't take a genius to work out that an undead uncle who killed your sister isn't the kind of guy you should hang around with.
If he hadn't decided that the time for the safety in the woods lecture was now, Stiles would have left on time and would not be speeding.
Seriously, Derek?
Seriously, Dad?
Of course, Derek is dead now. No point being mad at a dead guy. Fuck. Derek is dead.
Of course, Dad has found, like, 3 dead bodies in the woods this month. It's fair to be worried. That's a freaking lot of corpses all of a sudden.
He's starting to think he's gotten away clean when Peter runs in front of the car out of nowhere.
He's starting to think he won't be more than half an hour late when a deer runs in front of the car out of nowhere.
He slams on the brakes, but he knows he's screwed.
He swerves to miss it and slams on the brakes, but then he sees the tree and he knows he's screwed.
He slaps his hand over his heart and activates the rune on the pendant there, untested and untried, for use in last resort only. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan, but it's definitely last resort time, because Peter is grinning and reaching for the car.
He has a split second to realize that he's going to die, and that that is going to kill Dad.
The car crashes.
The car crashes.
And everything...
And everything...
goes black. Okay, so the performed, edited, sound affected, whatever version clocks in at just over 2 minutes. It took 6 minutes and 33 seconds for me to record the initial raw punch recording. Punch recording is when you make a mistake, you go back and you delete that mistake immediately and record from there, which is how I usually record. It took an additional 3.5 minutes to reorganize the text to create more parallels. So I'm hoping that you picked up on the fact that the text does not sound the same as how I read it in the first two versions. And this is because I wanted to weave in and out of both points of view more than the text does. And so I decided to move some things around so that you could more clearly hear the parallels of how Metiskette writes these simultaneous scenes. Then we have about 20 minutes of me fucking around and editing and re-recording any of the bits that I didn't like and lining up all of the sound effects and things like that so that you get a more interesting listening experience, I guess. So that, for a 2 minute and about 6 second scene, about 36 minutes of work went into that. This was a lot more time consuming because of the fact that, you know, because I had to play around with all the sound effects and line everything up just right, that's what takes time. It's that, listening to it over and over, moving things, moving inside the recording program, that's what takes time to be able to get it to that 2 minutes and 6 seconds. I tried to actually be really quick about it as well. I think there were a lot of things that I could have re-recorded and tried to make better, but I didn't because I'm trying to, you know, be really quick and speedy about it. However, having said that, I mean, it's been 2 hours since I started. So now that you've heard both the raw version and the completed, basically rough cut edited version, I'm going to go basically like line by line or whatever through the rough cut edited version and explain all the choices that I made. And this could be boring, but it could be okay. So if you want to like stop here, then feel free, but I guess there's a bit more to go. So, Play It Again by Metiskette, Scene 1, Director's Cut and Commentary. Styles is driving.
Styles is driving.
Here I decided on not having a simultaneous sound effect, so you don't have in your ear, Styles is driving, through layered on top of each other, but rather one after the other. I decided to use this instead of the simultaneous take just because I think it makes it much clearer and it establishes much earlier that there's something going on. So the fact that this is getting echoed is probably like pinging that something is going on here to the listener. So just as in the raw version, Darkest Timeline Styles is being performed in a darker, grittier tone, while the alternate universe Styles is much more dreamier and purer. And this is helped along by the sound effect layering on the alternate Styles' audio track. Styles is driving like the hounds of hell are chasing him.
Styles is driving like an idiot, and he knows it.
They basically are, if by hounds of hell you mean Peter Hale. Maybe that's generous. Maybe Peter doesn't rate that kind of respect.
He was supposed to pick Scott up 20 minutes ago. If he's any later, he's going to have to hand in his best friend card.
So this is where I start to muck about with the structure of the scene. I've elected to parallel the Styles as driving like a lines, cutting them both in half because they don't make too much sense standing alone, but neither do they make too much sense being added onto the Styles as driving like a lines. Actually, this is kind of where you start to get critical as a podficker as well about how authors write things and start to think like, oh God, why did you write it like that? It doesn't really make any sense, like, or to a listener, because you can obviously as a reader go back and go like, oh yes, I see the connection here. But as a somebody who is listening to it, that you cannot do any such thing. I mean, you can rewind that particular section, but it doesn't make much sense. So I elected to do the split like this because I thought it would make more sense than if I had left it the way it was. The thing here that is most annoying to me is that, because yeah, they basically are. If you can call the Hounds of Hell Peter Hale, that is a split. Like, those are two ideas that need to be in like the one, in the one sentence. But yeah, because yeah, they basically are, refers to the Hounds of Hell, which is Styles is driving like the Hounds of Hell are after him, because yeah, they basically are. So they all of these ideas interconnect with all these pronouns, and then it doesn't make any sense for you when you split it up and things like that. But the author has made that harder because in between that pronoun idea is then you have to switch to start the other Styles' point of view. That makes it very difficult for a listener, for a reader, not so much. So, Darkest Timeline Styles is bitter, and therefore his line readings I try to make bitter. And Alternate Universe Styles has, you know, things that are comparably like light and fluffy. Therefore, his lines are a lot more, I'm really feeling conflicted about this, but it's not, you know, life and death. Like, whereas like Darkest Timeline Styles would kind of scoff at Alternate Universe Styles' problems. And I feel like that is kind of the idea that is being conveyed in this scene as well. So that's what's going on with my choice of performance for these particular lines.
Scott will make the disappointed but not surprised face. It'll be the candle in the cake of awful this year has been.
I hate the when somebody makes a such and such face that authors employ when they don't want to say he makes an angry face, he makes a sad face. It's like he makes a like a, oh, I'm really judging you face and stuff like that, because it's very hard for me to pudfic those particular lines with any kind of like oral sense making. Like, it's fine on the page, but then, you know, having to convey that orally, it's really difficult, and I really, really hate those kinds of phrases. Okay, anyway, I've chosen a tone and reading that is very like angsty, teenage angsty, just to juxtapose the ridiculousness of the two situations. This is all Derek's fault.
This is all Dad's fault.
There are bits in podfic where I like to dub them, that'll do, because they're not too bad, they get the idea across, but they're not the best that they could be. However, you just don't want to lose the groove, and so you just kind of leave it there to deal with, maybe if you feel like it in post, which you never do, because then your voice changes and then it doesn't sound right, so you're kind of stuck with like with that recording that you just thought like, that'll do.
It shouldn't take a genius to work out that an undead uncle who killed your sister isn't the kind of guy you should hang around with.
Boy, that is a lot of emphasis going on in that line. So here's Styles as being a dick and being judgmental and trying to stress every terrible thing about Derek Hale because he just hates him so much at this point. Of course, Derek is dead now. No point being mad at a dead guy. Fuck. Derek is dead. And then following on the heels of that very quickly is Styles feeling remorse and guilt and mourning Derek's death. This line was pretty tricky. Styles doesn't sound as distraught as I want him to be, and you know, when he says, oh fuck, Derek's dead, but again, it's good enough.
Of course, Dad has found like 3 dead bodies in the woods this month. It's fair to be worried. That's a freaking lot of corpses all of a sudden.
This is, again, another good enough read, but I kind of waffled a bit on whether or not to have, that's an awful lot of corpses, to be, you know, more sarcastic or more humorous than it's currently being delivered. He slams on the brakes, but he knows he's screwed.
He swerves to miss it and slams on the brakes, but then he sees the tree. And he knows he's screwed.
Some judicious use of silences, pauses in between all of the little clauses so that the listener is forced to stop and take a breath and, I guess, be in suspense for just that little bit. He slaps his hand over his heart and activates the rune on the pendant there, untested and untried, for use in last resort only. He has no idea what's going to happen. This is such a Derek plan. But it's definitely last resort time, because Peter is grinning and reaching for the car. This is a little stream of consciousness where Styles and also the author is signposting that this is how Styles jumps from the darkest timeline to the alternate universe. And I'm not too happy with how this came out. It has all the elements on the page, but it's easily skimmable, and the way that it's written maybe is designed to, I don't know, reflect the fact that it's an easy point to dismiss or something. But I am mollified by the fact that I can rectify this later on, it because this pendant comes up a lot during the story.
He has a split second to realise that he's going to die, and that that is going to kill Dad.
It took me a few tries to get the balance of regret in this delivery, especially the note of having given up and using my voice to go softer at the end. I also consciously try not to overstress these quite heavy lines, like, it's going to kill Dad. Like, the emphasis on kill. I don't think it's necessary, and therefore I don't deliver those lines that way. The car crashes.
The car crashes.
And everything...
And everything...
goes black. Hooray, the end of the scene! In the actual story, everything goes black is not repeated twice. However, I think it makes a really nice parallel and interesting listening experience to hear the car crashes, and everything goes black. Like, I think that serves two purposes. One is that you get this simultaneity of the crashes happening at the same time, and two is when the goes black is simultaneous, you I hope it is conveyed that the two timeline, well, the Styleses are crossing over. And of course, you want to make it nice and dramatic. So hopefully that the drama is conveyed there too. So from the three goals, one is to make an interesting listening experience, two is to make it clear that there are two separate points of view, and three is to inject some sort of fear or drama. Hopefully those have kind of... I think I did pretty well on at least differentiating the two points of view. Injecting drama and making it interesting, it'll do. So that's kind of where you get really good intentions going into the project. But as time goes by and you feel it flow from your voice into the editing program, you start to feel like, okay, just... stop mucking about, just get this bit done so you can move on to more sections that are more fun and you don't have to just kind of agonize over it. I also find that opening scenes are the worst. They're the hardest because you just kind of want to get to the good part, or you kind of, it has that feeling that, you know, a good setup is everything, but sometimes the setups are a little bit too underdeveloped, or they're a little too overdeveloped, and, you know, you kind of have to roll with that because you want to get to the rest of the podfic where all the good stuff is. So, to being perfectly candid, as a podficker, you spend your time recording because you love a story so much that you see past its faults. Ironically, these faults then are tripled or quadrupled in your eyes because you have to face them so many times throughout the recording process. And this is not a slight on anybody. It's just, you know, even in your most favorite book, you don't love every single line. That's, I think, common. I hope. Maybe there are people who just love every single line of every single book, of their favorite book, I mean. But it's not true for me. For me, the recording process is more like, God, I love everything that the story chooses to be. I am willing to spend a lot of time and energy into creating something based on this thing that I love, while at the same time pushing through all the elements that don't make it perfect. But, you know, love is about acknowledging those weaknesses and loving it despite that. Or something. Geez, I'm not sure if I actually did as good as a job as Anna Unfolding on all of her direct-to-cut commentary. I guess a lot of it is kind of just trying to perform to... I feel like a lot of it was just like, oh, he's really angry here, so I try to make him angry. Oh, he's really upset here, so I try to make him upset. And I just... I mean, unless you want to go into the minutiae of that thing, like, oh, I put emphasis here instead of putting emphasis there and things like that. I mean, these are choices that, of course, I deliberately made, but I just don't think that they're really that exciting to talk about. Even in, like, something that was only 2 minutes long, you actually, there's heaps and heaps of choices, and I could have, like, gone on for a while. And, you know, I hope that actually you get enough of an idea from the raw recording to the fixed up recording that there are lots of things that have changed. So the raw recording, I should point out, was a different recording to the fixed up sound affected recording. That one was done with my normal recording process. And so I just don't do well with recording first and editing afterwards. I have to work with punch recording, because keep in mind that the raw recording was 6 minutes long or 4 minutes long, 4 minutes long, and the punch recording was 6 minutes long. So while I could have spent less time with the raw recording, it wouldn't have had as much impact as the punch recording. With the punch recording, I feel a lot more emotionally invested. With the raw recording, it's a lot of like, eh, that'll do. So I guess I reduced the amount of eh, that'll do in punch recording rather than if I did it in raw recording. And also, like, I just, you know, I would never get anything done if I had 2 hours of raw recording that I hadn't started to edit as I went. That would mean nothing from me, like, ever. So sorry for making you listen to like 40 minutes of crap where I talk at you. I hope that you found it kind of interesting. I certainly thought that there was a distinct difference between all three of the different takes, especially because they're very, very short. I mean, it was a very short scene, so it's in 2 minutes. Three separate versions of 2 minutes actually means a lot. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot of choices that the podficker makes to make the listening experience their own interpretation. And I guess I'm not very good at talking about it, but I hope that I've showed it to you orally through listening. You know what I mean. In the meantime, if you were interested in the story that I used in this recording, it is, again, Play It Again. Ha ha ha, ironic. Play It Again by Mr. Kett. And there's already a full podfic that's about 10 hours done by Mothlights. I've only listened to about an hour or so of it. And, you know, if the author ever gets back to me about whether or not they're cool with multiplicity, we'll see whether or not I actually do one. But in the meantime, maybe don't dob me into them. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this was somewhat entertaining. See ya.